Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Tuesday night open call. It is November 15th, halfway through the month, and before you know it, we'll all be stuffed with turkey and bemoaning all the Christmas shopping that we've had to do.
Oh,
so,
man.
Don't blink your eyes more than once, or it'll be past. As fast as the time goes for all of us anymore. I was just telling Jesse that, yes, I had a wonderful visit. I did go to visit my youngest daughter this past weekend. I drove 1,850 miles in 71 hours, round trip up to eastern Iowa.
Jesus.
And it was great to see my daughter again and watch her celebrate her 30th birthday. And for those of you that may not know, she is special needs. She has Down syndrome. She is very, very active. She works a part-time job, and she lives in a group facility. And she was on the dance floor for the entire birthday party, 3 hours.
That's awesome, man.
She was cooking, and she was leading the crowd. And I'll tell you what, she was just having a blast, but I'll bet you she slept like a brick Sunday night. I drove to midnight Sunday night. But anyway, had a good trip, other than, you know, the usual stupid drivers and stuff like that along the way. But, you know, the weather was good, and accommodations I had, I made some reservations through Priceline. I don't know if anybody has ever used Priceline. I'm sure some people have, but if you haven't,
oh,
you
sure.
might want to look
yeah.
into it. Yeah, I saved some good money on my lodging through Priceline. And booking online, I got a rental vehicle. I put 1,850 miles on a vehicle, and I had it for 4 days, and it cost me $129.40. So you can't beat that. I don't want to put those kind of miles on my vehicle for that kind of money. So.
No, sir.
No.
I use Priceline this weekend, David, at $50 a night I'm saving on a hotel just as we speak. So,
yeah, yep, hey, that's good. Exactly what you got to do. Yep.
That's it, man.
I got into an extended stay America for $32 plus tax on the way out.
Damn.
You can't beat that with a stick.
No.
And then the other place I paid $51 plus tax, and they had a really, really good breakfast and everything. Both of them were real nice places. So anyway, it was a good trip. I enjoyed it. It was great. I got to see my younger brother I hadn't seen in years. He looks real good. He's very happily retired from the police department, as is my older brother. And I'm glad they're not out there given the climate today with the police department. So the risk is diminished, and he's glad that he's done. So anyway, Jesse, we have to do a disclaimer here, and you have the patent on it, so
yeah.
It's your deal, buddy.
The patent, yeah, right. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to our Tuesday night call. Of course, as usual, if you're looking for legal advice, please hang up this phone and go call an attorney somewhere in your area, because there's no such thing as that here. But anyway, again, we're going to have fun, and we're ready, willing, and able to answer all your questions regarding our experiences and maybe how you can handle some of yours. But again, legal advice is done by attorneys, and we're not attorneys. We don't even purport to be an attorney. So, again, legal advice, not here, guys. If you need it, go somewhere else, please. With that being said, David, I will hand it back to you, buddy.
All right. Well, you know, the usual drill that we have here is we start with good news. So if anybody has any good news, the way you put your hand up in the queue on this call is to hit the 1 key on the keypad in your phone. All you got to do, there's no star or anything, just hit the 1 key on the keypad in your phone, and that will put you in the queue, and we will answer your question. And I'm looking for Terry on the board here. And
yeah, Larry will not be here. You said Terry, but Larry will not be
yeah,
here.
Yeah, there's Terry.
Speaking thing
yeah.
or something.
Yeah, Larry's got what kind of deal?
There's a speaker in Orlando that he went to see this evening.
Oh, a speaker.
Yeah, some speaker. So, I don't know. I don't know what it was.
Heck of a deal. Well, the rest of us are here. We'll take good news first, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah,
and
I
do
was wondering
some...
when you were going to unmute me.
Yeah, well, better late than never, Terry. How are you tonight?
When you said your daughter was dancing all night, I said that's my kind of gal, and you couldn't hear me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, she was, I mean, she was leading the crowd. She really was. She was just having so much fun. And there was
that's
about
awesome,
100 people
man.
Showed up. This was quite a deal. About 100 people there. So, anyway, we are going to go to 714 for good news. You have been unmuted.
Hello.
Hello,
hi.
714.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Well, I went down to the courthouse and I did what you told me to do. So the case is valid.
Okay,
I
figured it was.
They did not serve me properly. So they did serve someone there, but not me. So
Who did they serve?
Somebody that lives there.
Oh, at that other
address? Yeah, it was my old address, but I mean, to me, that was good news because they didn't serve me properly. So,
oh,
I don't know
what
that means
you don't
exactly.
live there. Yeah, how long has it been since you lived there?
Probably about 5 months. So that's how that letter got forwarded to me.
Those people forwarded it?
No, it was forwarded by the post office because I have a forwarding
on
that address.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah,
right.
So they forwarded it. So.
Yeah.
So I'm taking that as good news.
Well, they've got the lawsuit going. They've served somebody, but not you, and nobody at your residence where you live. You don't live there. You haven't lived there for a long time, and you know that's their problem, not yours.
Exactly.
So
you
did you get your validation letters out today?
I did. They all went out.
Good.
Yep. So that's the only
step
I needed.
Just so the background for everybody on this is she was on the call last night, and she has one lawsuit going now with Midland where she's been sued, and she's getting ready to file a federal suit against them. But she found out there was another company that sued her, only the notice of the complaint was sent to her by mail, forwarded from a previous address. And
nice.
They suggested that she go check the court records today to find out for sure. Never make assumptions. We always tell everybody, don't assume anything. Get the facts, which she did. She went to the courthouse, found that the suit was filed, and they served somebody at that other residence, which is not legal service on her. And lo and behold, it is another debt buyer. So now she knows
nice.
the system, and she's just following the steps. The same thing with this new one, only she hasn't been served. So if they try and do any bogus stuff, they'll find that they don't have a valid judgment, and we'll go from there. So
yep.
that's good news. You got your facts together, and you got your letters out. So that definitely.
And I went and got all my little tabs and sticky notes in my file folders to put everything and organize everything.
There you go. That's the other important part of things. Right, right. Keep that all separate from the other one, and deal with them individually. So you know you got to be working on getting your federal lawsuit ready, right?
Yes, that's my next step. And I didn't want to bring it up right now, but because I don't know what my next step is with that, since they didn't. Did I do nothing?
Well, right now we're just doing good news. If you got questions on things, you come back and we can discuss any questions you have regarding that.
Okay.
All righty.
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay. Well, I got you in the queue here. I got it marked, so we'll come back to you when we do Q&A, okay?
All right, good job. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Okay. Yeah, well, these debt buyers, you know, dum-dee-dum-dum. Well, we'll just serve somebody there. That's good enough.
They don't care.
They don't care. No, no, they don't. Let's go to 678. You have got some good news for us, I'll bet.
Well, I was, I had a question. It wasn't good news, but I just had a question I put into the queue too early. So can you come back on and hit me for a question?
All right. Yeah, we'll be back. We'll see how things go here with the good news stuff, and we will come back and get you.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. All right. One more time, I'm going to announce this. The way we start things out is good news, and we want to hear people's good news. And, you know, because we always hear the downside of all the garbage out there, you know, the problems people have and the illegal activities that everybody's engaged in. And there's still plenty of that, so don't think there isn't. But if you have good news, hit the one key on the keypad on your phone, and that'll put you in the queue. And if we don't have any other people that pop up with good news, then we are going to go right straight into Q&A, and we will start covering the bases there. All right. Now, we do have somebody from 913 that raised their hand. You're unmuted for your good news.
I'm
hello,
sorry,
913.
I have a question. I better hold back.
Okay. Yeah, this is not questions yet. All right. One more time. Good news only. Hit the one key on the keypad on your phone. Otherwise, we're going to go to Q&A. And I think we're just going to
apparently, we don't have that much
that.
Good news tonight.
Yeah, well, you know, it ebbs and flows, as you so well know. You know, sometimes you got to...
Oh, yeah.
You end up with a bunch of it, and other times you just don't have as much. It just depends on what's going on in people's situations, their cases, you know, whether they're litigating, whether they're, you know, talking to people that have violated their rights and, you know, trying to get something done without litigation, which is what you always want to do. You know, if people don't want to cooperate with you and come to a reasonable settlement, well, then, you know, do what you got to do through the courts to bring them to account. But, you know, we always try that first. All right. Well, we don't have any other hands up, so we are going to go back to California to 714. Catherine?
There I am. Can you hear me there?
There you are. Okay. You said you had a question for us.
So now what's my next step since, I mean, do I do anything at all since they didn't serve me?
Well,
I got a copy of that service just so I could have it for my notes so I know when they served, which was November 19th.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter when it was because you weren't served. They served somebody somewhere else. You don't know
okay.
who.
Okay. I don't know.
Well, see, they can serve an adult at the residence of someone depending on exactly what your law is in California for service. But they can't.
Right.
They can't serve a stranger at some other location. I mean, that just doesn't work, you know.
Right.
Now they send a notice to you in the mail, but that is not considered legal service.
Okay.
So you sent them a demand for validation.
Yeah.
Okay.
So now I just wait for that.
Well, where are you as far as your process goes compared to the process you had when you got served by the other company? You're not served yet, right?
Yeah, I'm not served yet.
Right. So what actions would you need to take? If you haven't been served.
Wait for my response for my validation?
Well, right. There's one other thing that you can be working on, and that would be?
My federal lawsuit.
Thank you. You're getting with the program. be working on getting it ready, writing it up. What are the facts? What's going on? Where did they violate? Who violated? Name the names, the places, and the claims, and get that document ready to go so when the time comes that you're ready to file that, that you need to file it, you can just take it to the courthouse. You're not going, oh, well, you know, I got to get going. I got to get this finished. No. Get it done.
Yeah.
You know, as I've said so many times, and everybody's heard me say this, if you've listened to these calls at all,
mm-hmm.
get ahead of the curve rather than being behind the eight ball.
Right.
In other words, wherever you have the opportunity, work ahead and get things done that you know you have to do anyway.
Right.
So the other stuff, just wait for your response to the demand for validation. You know, them sending a letter to some other address and it being forwarded to you is not proper service in California, at least not to my knowledge. Is it, Jesse?
No. Nope.
I know California is a different animal, but it's not that different.
No, it's not that different at all, really.
Okay.
So, anyway, yep, there's your plan of action. You know, you've already got the one that you're working on. So this next one, other than the fact you haven't been served yet, is you just go ahead and plan on going down the same road, only now you've got a situation where if they try anything funky in court, like getting a default judgment saying you were served, that, judgment is void because you weren't served. But this is the
if
kind of
nonsense
that they do all the time.
If that were to happen, then I would just have to go to court and fight that?
You would file a motion to vacate a void judgment for lack of service. They're going to, and they would come back and they would argue it, saying, "Well, we served an adult at this and such address." Well, that's fine, but I haven't lived at that address for about 6 months, and I don't know who's at that address. Do you happen to know who's at that address? Was it rental
family.
And you moved out and somebody else moved in? Pardon?
Right. Yeah, it was a rental.
Okay, so you don't even have any idea who's
there. Yeah, I
do. Rental,
know.
Huh? Yeah, that's good. Easy.
Yeah. Okay.
See,
any
they have
on...
to do legal service. What? Go ahead.
Right. I was going to ask if there are any tips that any of you have as to the different, like when I go onto the website, something specific to look up, because there's just so many.
Okay, there's a search box. There's a search box up in the top right corner.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's one in the forum that's just for the forum, and then there's one in the website that's for the website proper. Put the keywords that you're looking for in that search box.
Okay.
Gary did a lot of work to set up that search feature in the website so people would be able to find it. But that's how you find certain things, by using keywords.
Okay.
Okay. Keywords or key phrases.
Perfect. All right.
That help?
Perfect. Yes. Thank you.
All right. Okay. That take care of your questions then?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. Well, we're going to go on to the next one then. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Have a good night, guys.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay.
All right. And needless to say, everybody, if you have a question, you know, you hit that one key on the keypad on the phone, and that's going to put you into the queue, and then we will take your questions. And now we are going to go on to 678. You had a question for us. Go ahead.
Yes, I did. My aunt, they are filing a. We're in Georgia, and they're going to file a. Her house is already in foreclosure, and she broke her hip, and she can't get out.
Oh God! Sorry to hear that.
Thank you. To do a filing, and we tried to contact them and let them know that, you know, if we need an she needed an opportunity, because she wants to file. And but they keep moving full steam ahead with the foreclosure. Is there anything we can do to stop this, to stop it right now until she's able to file?
Wow, I've never heard of this situation.
Jesse, wouldn't that be a really good reason for an emergency TRO?
Yeah, I mean, that'd be the best reason for a temporary restraining order, especially if you tell her she's down and out and she's looking for counsel.
I mean,
she's if you go on the website, you'll find TROs in the Georgia section and the Texas section. I don't know if you're a member or not, but you really should be. And that's the only place I know. That's the only way I know, you know, that you're going to stop that. And then, but Terry, the thing is, you might have to go for a damn hearing. There's no way to get her to a hearing either.
Telephonic.
Telephonic's the only way. Yeah.
But, you know, I would say, obviously, someone else is going to have to deliver paperwork to the court, et cetera.
Yeah.
And when it comes to Georgia State Court, and this is important, you need to call and talk to the clerk, because I know for the federal courts, we can do everything by mail. I have to, because I got to deal with Augusta, and I'm a long ways from there. But I don't know if you can do that with the state. So you find out which state court, you call the clerk, explain the situation, that she is injured seriously and bedridden, and she needs to put in this emergency restraining order, or temporary restraining order, and that because she is injured and completely non-ambulatory, she cannot come to the court. So is it possible for her to deal with the court via the mail, or can she appoint someone in the family to bring documents to the court for filing, et cetera?
Well, anybody can do that, Terry. Anybody can file for you.
And
I can drive them down and drop them in the clerk. That's not a big deal. It's a matter of if they call it for the hearing, for that TRO hearing. That's the problem. The only way they're going to do it is like somebody said earlier. I don't know if it was you or Dave, but it's going to happen.
I think it would be good if you apply for a TRO to put right in it due to the fact that the defendant is not ambulatory. Any scheduled hearing would need to be via telephone for the defendant.
Right, and she would make herself available for that by telephone, but she is temporarily bedridden and unable to physically appear to defend herself.
Right,
so
right.
It
would be a physical impossibility for her to appear in court at this time.
Yeah, I can't really see a court denying that.
They have to make the accommodation under the Americans with Disability Act. If there's for her physically to get there, the ADA requires them to make an accommodation. If not, it's discrimination.
Oh, and here's another thought. This is just a thought. I know, you know, if you're new to this group, you're not up on things enough yet, but put it in the back of your mind. If the other side refuses to work with her under these dire circumstances. How old is she?
I know where you're going.
84.
She's 84?
84.
Oh, my God. Georgia has a statute. It's the only statute we have that really protects anybody. But it is for the elderly, anybody over 60 years old. If anybody does anything to financially or emotionally harm a person over 60, and that harm is a violation of any other statute, state or federal, there it's the Georgia Elderly Abuse Statute, and it's a $10,000 statutory damage per violation. So, you know, think about that, and if you send me an email, I can send you the exact statute number, et cetera, so that you can bone up on that a little bit.
But okay, I'll do that.
That law only kicks in when another statute, state or federal, is found to be in violation. For instance, the FDCPA or FCRA or any of the stuff that we deal with. So, you know, that's a good one to put in your back pocket. And it should give you some leverage as well, give her some leverage in dealing with these people. Do you want me to slap you with that? You know?
Yeah.
Just remember that the TRO has to be, because she's looking for counsel, she needs the opportunity, because if she says anything other than that, all they have to do is set up a telephonic hearing and they've qualified or met anything that they have to legally. Do you agree, John?
I agree. I do agree.
Yeah, so make sure that he says I'm looking for counsel. She says it's looking for counsel. She's unable to do so at the moment because of this condition, obviously. Okay?
Okay. Okay,
and then don't waste this precious time. Make sure you help her learn what she needs to know to beat them.
I will.
At her age, can I suggest you really do make the effort to look for an attorney?
Yeah.
I will.
She's not going to learn a damn thing, okay? You need just to get her something, you know what I mean?
Oh, don't count on it.
God bless her, man. That's tough.
I tell you what, up to the time my grandma died, she probably would have been better at this than I am. Believe you me.
Yeah, that's rare. So,
most people aren't in that situation.
And that's how my aunt. She's really sharp minded and everything. But like I said, the hip really got a. You know,
That'll knock you flat.
It really slowed her down, but she is very vibrant and great mind and all of that. But tell me this now: can I get that number for that particular statute? If I give you my email address,
just send
Don't
me
do that
an
over
email.
Here.
Just
send me an email
at queensongbird. That's all one word: queensongbird@gmail.com. And put in the message that you spoke about your aunt so that I know who you are, and then I'll email it back to you.
All right, queensongbird@gmail.com?
Yeah.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right. Y'all have a good evening. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
That's a tough one, isn't it? Wow.
Yeah, yeah. Hate to hear that kind of stuff. Well, I'll tell you.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Well, do the best you can. That's all you can do. All right, let's go to 973. You're unmuted. Go ahead.
Good evening.
Good evening.
How you doing, Will?
Good evening. I got a few questions. I sent in the QWR for my and I asked for the audit of the account, and they only the account started in 2011, but they only sent me from 2013 up until now. So I don't know, should I ask for the beginning of it? Should I write them back and ask for the original beginning of the loan for that information? Or should I, or the 2013 should be a good?
Okay, repeat that now. They didn't send you your full.
The order for the account history, the payment history. They sent it. The original mortgage started in 2011, but they only sent me from 2013 up until now. Should I ask for the reason why they didn't send me from 2011, or is that good?
Terry, are you typing? We can hear you clicking.
He's typing, but that's not what I still don't get what he's saying. They didn't send him
all total documentation. The loan originated in 11, but they only sent him from information from 2013 forward.
Oh,
and he's asking if that's acceptable,
already,
which it obviously isn't.
Of course not. No. No, sir.
So should I write another one and ask him for the...
Well, here's the deal. You've already asked them once, and a QWR, if they do not respond, then you already have a lawsuit against them. Let's just put it that way. It's a done deal.
Okay, and I got it. They gave me a mortgage modification, right? So in the mortgage modification, they're saying that they couldn't let the mortgage modification go through because of a lien that was on the property. Now, the lien
was on the
property.
What do you mean
the name? A lien?
Lien, okay.
Yeah, so they're saying that they couldn't give me the modification because of a lien. So now, my thing is, the lien been on the property before I refinanced into this mortgage. So I asked them, okay, why did y'all accept the mortgage before with the lien on it? Now y'all can't give me a modification because of the lien. And they saying that the lien wasn't on there before they did the mortgage. But I know it was on there. So I asked for a copy of the original.
Well, who was the original name on there?
What you mean? The original name on the loan or the original name
on the loan?
On the
loan, yeah. Were you on that loan and then changed it, or were you put on after the fact and somebody else has it?
No, I'm the original owner of the loan. But what happened was when I first bought the house, I put my kid's mother on it, and she had a lien against the property. Now, I did a refinance from option one to Wells Fargo. And the lien was on there then. But somehow, some way, it went through. Through the title search.
They didn't pay off the lien just by any chance? They didn't pay it off that you know of?
I don't know what happened. All thing I know is one minute they said it was a lien, the next minute they saying we good. So I don't know what happened. I mean, they just said I refinanced. So I explained to them that, okay, when I refinanced, the lien was on there. They said it wasn't, but I know it was. So my thing is, I asked for the original title search from that particular transaction. Would that show the lien on there, or should I go and get some other type of confirmation of the lien that was on there?
The only thing I can think of, is a title search. Don't you, John? That would have showed any liens on there.
That should have if it was done properly.
Yeah, that's the only thing I can think of.
What is the lien for, and how much is it?
They never told me what it was for, how much it is. Like I said, it was in somebody else's name, and my kid's mother's name, and from my understanding, when I tried to do the refinance, they said I couldn't do it because of the lien. But then they told me to take her off of my deed. So I did a quick claim deed, took her off of the deed, and then it went through. But now they're saying that this lien is back on it. That's why I can't do it.
Yeah, well, you can't put a lien on and take it off and put it on. You know what I mean?
So that's
my point.
Doesn't
make any sense.
Yeah.
So when I was trying to refinance, they said, "Look, this is what you got to do: take off your deed, and we can get the refinance to go through." So I did a quick claim deed, took her off of the deed. So now they did a title search, and it didn't come up. Because that's what I didn't understand. Because if the lien was already attached to the property, it wouldn't matter what name come up. It had come up. So now they saying that okay. This lien is on the property, and we can't do the modification because of the lien. So I'm saying the lien was on there before y'all even did the mortgage from the door. So what happened that the lien got off?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I have no idea. I've never heard of such. John, have you ever heard of such a thing?
No, I haven't, because putting liens on and taking them off is not that easy. They'd have to put a release of lien on, and that usually means the loan's paid. Then they couldn't come and stick it on again.
So
they can't just they don't just put them on and take them off, kind of like the wind. It doesn't work that way.
So what recourse?
You need to go and get documentation from the title company that was involved in that that refinance, and see what the paperwork says. See if it shows that lien is on there, or if it's not on there, and start getting some evidence together of what the situation actually is.
Because the lien is not in my name, so how would I find out any information when they don't give you information if it's not pertaining to you?
No, the lien would be public record. You don't need them for anything. You can go look on your public record and see if there's a lien on your property. You don't need anybody to do that. You should do it yourself.
Yeah. The lien's on the property. It's not on you.
Yeah.
It's not on someone else. It's on the property. It's a secured interest in the property. If you go to an independent title company and ask them if they will do a pencil search on your address, that would most likely show what liens are in place.
Because when I go down, when I did the search down in the county clerk, it didn't show no liens on it. It don't show nothing.
That's my point. You got to look. If it's not on public record, it's definitely not going to be on any title search, right, John? They shouldn't. They should come up
correct
simultaneously. So
correct.
Okay, and so.
And they called it a lien. They called it a lien, or they called it a debt, or a judgment, or what?
They said it was a lien on my deed. So that, I don't know. And then they don't want to give me no information about it. They're just saying that it was a lien on the deed. They didn't want to give me no information. But I knew it was a lien on it before I refinanced.
Let me ask you this. Did they make you pay an upfront fee before they told you this?
No. I was in modification. I did the modification for 3 months. And then they said, we can't do it because of the title didn't come back.
This is a refinance with your existing mortgage lender?
I refinanced into Wells Fargo, and now I'm going through the modification with them. And then they said at the end of the 3 months that the modification was denied because of a lien on my title. I sent them
in. Okay, and during the 3 months, did you make payments to them of some sort?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh. It's another scam.
What happened?
Another scam where they're getting you to pay for them to be able to foreclose on you.
And gaining all the information from the application. They find out all the information about you on the application. And by eliminating someone else off the title, then they've got one less person to fight in court.
You got it.
So,
yeah. They're doing a scam on you is what it boils down to.
But what's my recourse?
At this point, I don't know. What state are you in?
New Jersey.
Yeah, I don't know what the New Jersey law is for something like that. I don't know, man. I don't know. Because it surely doesn't fall under FDCPA or anything like that, so...
And did they tell you some of this in writing or just over the phone?
Yeah, just over the phone.
You mean so they didn't deny you in writing?
I never got nothing in denial for in writing.
Oh, man.
Tell them you want something in writing. If you're denying me of the modification, would you please put that in writing? Otherwise,
yes.
I can only assume that it's going through because I made my payments timely and met my obligations under the modification agreement.
Right. And if it was me, I would contact the Secretary of State of New Jersey's office and find someone, call as many times as I have to call and explain that to them. Because Wells Fargo Bank, when they're advertising on the radio that they're going to be giving people money back and doing this, that, and the other because they were caught screwing people, it gives another reason for them to be investigated. Seriously.
Yeah, and making a complaint to the CFPB.
Because if they did it to you, they've probably done it to someone else.
Right. Yeah, a complaint to the CFPB is an order as well.
Well, I should call the attorney, who I should contact to find out?
The New Jersey Attorney General's office.
Okay. And explain to them what I just explained to y'all.
Yeah,
right.
Explain to them that you applied for a modification. They've given you a story about, you know, denying it because there's a lien. You've been to the courthouse. There's no lien. And they refuse to give you a denial in writing. But they've taken your money, and they've taken all your information and broke the agreement.
They led you
okay,
to believe
good.
That if you followed the agreement, you would get your modification.
Right. And when you talk to them, just keep telling them that, you know, you believe it's unfair and deceptive what they did, and you don't know how they can get away with it.
That's true.
Okay,
that's true.
Unfair and deceptive. Unfair and deceptive. It falls under unfair and deceptive trade practices.
Okay, so far as the lien goes, there's nothing I can do about that.
Well,
you have to research
isn't a lien. There probably isn't a lien. They've just lied to you. They're making an excuse not to give you a modification now.
Yeah, because a lot of these banks have been caught for running a scam on modification, getting people to fall for it and then stop making their payments and then turn around and foreclose on them and deny the modification. They've trapped them into foreclosure, and they've been getting caught for it. So now they're just coming up with a different angle. That's all.
Different scam.
Okay. Thanks.
All righty.
Thanks.
Thank you. Good luck with that one. You got a real project on your hands there, unfortunately.
Yeah, he does. Yes, he does.
Yeah. Man. All right. Well, we've got somebody here from 913 with a hand up. Have you got a question for us?
Good evening, everyone. Yes, I have a question. Thank you. I'm still working on my discovery. I'm looking at production. I've got 5 questions. And, you know, I really only have 1 answer for all 5 of these. So that was my take on it, so I wanted to run it by you, if that's all right. This is the answer. You know, of course, John's webinar, you know. This request is overly broad, unduly burdensome, oppressive and harassing, period. It seeks documents which plaintiff would already possess, period. This party disputes any alleged debt or account. And because all 5 of these start with all, and I guess before I let you know what these say, I guess one of my questions is, if I have the same response to 5 questions in a row, would it cause any adverse reaction on the other side, or is it okay?
That's
to
what they typically
answer?
Do.
Yeah,
that's what they typically do.
Exactly right. And if the answer is the answer, like for instance, the answer is I have no knowledge. Well, you know, you can't help it that they keep asking you stuff you don't know. When I went to a deposition, I really did not go there intending to be Hillary Clinton's cousin and say I can't recall to everything. But she just kept asking me stuff I couldn't possibly answer. So that was my answer. I don't know.
Oh, wow. I don't know. How many hours did that take?
Well, she insisted on 7, and after 2.5, and she called 3 breaks, she gave up.
She gave up. Oh, good. You made her give up.
Well, there was nothing else to ask me.
Because you don't know.
Exactly.
Well, I don't know if I need to read these or not, but this is so new to me. Maybe I'd read a couple of them.
You need to wait a second. You need to use your brain and make your own decisions. You can you can generally read a question and see, like you said, if it starts with all, it's overly broad, correct?
Mm-hmm.
But I would modify what's in that webinar and say, you know, this request is overly broad because it requests all documents. This request is unduly burdensome because it seeks information that the plaintiff would already have in their possession, and producing such documents would be a costly burden to the defendant. You know, and state the reason why. If you go beyond and state the reason why, it makes it very difficult for them to overcome. If you're in federal court, you definitely want to state the reason why. You know, there's an objection. Without the reason why, it's called an unfounded objection. But if you can lay the foundation for the objection by stating what it is, it's very hard for it to be overcome.
Okay. Because it's saying things like all documents that refer, relate, or pertain to any of the occurrences mentioned in the plaintiff's petition. I mean, that is incredibly broad.
And it doesn't give a range of dates.
What is it referring to, though? If it's 3 documents, what do you care?
Right. First, they've got to define what they're talking about, and they don't.
Mm-hmm.
It's so broad that you can't even understand what they're asking for.
Right.
Request is unintelligible. That's the word.
And
yeah, no, I would use it. That's a good one, Dave.
Okay. And all communications between you and anyone other than your attorney that relate, refer, or pertain to any of the occurrences mentioned in plaintiff's petition. I mean, it is just unbelievably.
That's not none of their business. They're expecting you to repeat private conversations you may or may not have with anybody.
It's objection. The request is not calculated to produce evidence that is relevant to this cause of action or admissible at trial.
Word for word, exactly.
I see. All right, so I'm not dreaming. I mean, this is really broad.
No,
you know?
What you're dealing with is just common garbage that we see all the time.
Oh, common garbage.
sorry to tell you, but you're nothing special in this regard.
Well, you know, I'm actually an editor, and so my job is to cut out all the BS and make everything crystal clear. So it's
well, you wouldn't work as a lawyer.
No, I don't suppose I would, you know. Because
no, you definitely wouldn't.
You'd be a failure as a lawyer, big time.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, because I would rather do things that help people.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but I mean, I'm talking about from the words, because they put in lots of extra words and fluff and confuse. Mm-hmm. The last thing they want to do is clarify anything that they do.
And a whole lot of words they don't even know the definitions to. So.
Yeah, yeah. They don't know the meaning of the word concise. It's not.
That's not the vocabulary.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's really
okay. So what else?
Because...
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead with your questions.
Thank you. When I go back to my admissions here, 9 and 10, I thought I would run by you too, because you're saying plaintiff has been damaged in the amount of, you know, what they're suing me for, plus attorney fees in the amount of, and that's, and court costs. So.
And that's an admission?
That's, yeah, that's an admission.
You have
so
no
to
knowledge.
Me it seems, mm-hmm.
Am I hearing this right, David? That they want her to admit that the plaintiff has been damaged? Is that what she's saying?
Yeah.
Yes.
You know how I would respond to that? Are you stupid? How That's how I personally would respond to that. You are stupid. How can I possibly have that knowledge?
Oh, my Lord.
So it's not a deny. It is a can neither admit
here's,
or
are
deny.
You stupid? Here's what you do.
That's an are you stupid?
Here's what you do. Plaintiff can neither admit nor deny
nor
because
deny.
Plaintiff lacks sufficient information to draw a reasonable conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Plaintiff is convinced.
No.
Stupid.
No.
Defendant is convinced plaintiff has lost their collective mind.
Right.
Don't
and
really
then,
say.
And so the interrogatory that correlates to number 10 would be asking then for facts if I denied it. So is the neither admit or deny because I lack sufficient information?
That's
does
not
that
a
turn
denial.
Into a
That's
deny?
Not a denial.
Okay.
Oh. That's
okay,
not a denial. No. You just said you
read,
can't
read
admit
the next
or deny.
One.
Yeah.
Read
right.
the next one so
well,
we can hear it.
Oh, okay. The next one is, said credit card agreement provides that interest shall accrue until said balance is paid in full, and that plaintiff is entitled to a reasonable attorney fee and collection costs if the matter is referred to an attorney.
Well, wait a second. Now, if I remember correctly, in your case, they filed in a generic terms and conditions, but they didn't file in a contract that had your signature on it. So,
correct.
So that plaintiff can neither admit nor deny because the information required to answer this admission has been requested of the plaintiff, but plaintiff has failed to provide the documents to the defendant.
Right. And that
remember
is,
we went
that's
over
the
this
same
before.
One we used. Yes.
Exactly.
Isn't it?
But you can neither admit nor deny. In other words, there's no admission, there's no denial. You can't do either because they're screwing around. That's what you're telling the
yeah.
judge. I can't make head nor tail of this because they're screwing around. I've asked them for these documents and they failed to give them to me, Your Honor.
Right.
They're the ones that should be in the hot seat over producing discovery stuff. As a condition precedent to filing the lawsuit, you know, they're supposed to give me the proof when I requested validation, and they didn't.
Right. Right. So I'm not dreaming. These questions really
You're
are
not dreaming.
Very difficult.
It's that simple. This stuff isn't rocket science. It's designed for eighth
yeah.
grade educations. The U.S. court system is designed for people with an eighth grade education to do it, and lawyers make it seem like they're gods, but they're not. They just the affluent flows from their mouths, and you're an editor, and you're trying to distill it down, and that's just not the way they operate.
Hmm.
They sling the stuff out in the fields and rake it around, and it stinks to high heaven. And you know, so it's not that you answer it. You have to give them the way the court looks at it. You know, it's based on the cards that are on the table. I can't admit or deny because they didn't give me the stuff I requested to even address this.
Mm-hmm.
And you've already denied with whatever they put in there is a generic thing, so you know you already stated it's a generic thing and it's not the original deal. There's nothing to show that because there was no original deal,
right?
So they're trying to make you admit to something that is fake.
Yes,
it could apply to it could just as well apply to the judge or his children or his wife.
Right. And
or
so,
his mother-in-law.
Since I say without knowledge, then the correlating interrogatory, if I leave it blank, because
you can't
they said,
leave it
you
blank.
Know, basically, well, they
why
say,
why would you leave it
well,
blank?
Oh, well, let's see. Because of the way they phrase it, it says, if request number one of plaintiff's request for admissions directed to defendant is not admitted, state fully and completely the facts upon which defendant's denial of request number one is based. And that's how
well, they're making an assumption. Well, listen, they're making an assumption that if you don't admit it, you're denying it. But you're saying right. you have no knowledge. That's different.
So I can go ahead and put in that the party has stated that she is without knowledge. For each one
yeah.
of those
well,
to fill
just,
the space,
can,
make the answer.
Listen,
mm-hmm. yes.
listen, you're making it complicated. All you do is you say, see admission number so-and-so, and then just copy mm-hmm. the same thing right there.
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, what?
Copy
what
it over.
That's just yeah. so simple, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, don't try and make
if
this
you
difficult. You're
you
trying to make
it,
it more difficult than it really is, to be honest with you.
Oh. Right. Let me
you're
ask
trying to
you
overthink
question.
It.
Did they send you separate sets of discovery requests? In other words, a set of admissions, a set of requests for production, a set of interrogatories, or do they, or are they mixed together in one sheet?
They're separate.
Oh, really? Because sometimes they do a flowing set where you'll get an interrogatory and then a request for production and then an admission and another admission. But, yeah, you're overthinking this, and it's really
okay.
simple.
Okay, you got your guidance?
I do. Thank
okay.
you very much, everyone.
Okay, you're welcome.
You're more than welcome.
Have a good
yeah.
evening. Bye now.
You bet. All right. Yeah, you guys, you don't want to overthink some of these things. Discovery can be a challenge. We know that. I know that personally. But the simplicity of things is really, really, really important. It really is. All right. Let's go to 386. You have been unmuted.
Hello, everyone.
Good evening.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello, everyone.
How are you?
Good, good. I just wanted to find out if Jesse heard about the Supreme Court decision on statute of limitations.
A Supreme Court decision for Florida?
Florida.
Florida, yeah.
No, has it come out? I didn't even know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it came out 2 weeks, I think 2 weeks ago I heard it. I heard it on the show on the radio, and it's not good
it.
For
and
us.
And matter of fact, Marshall and I were just talking about it last week.
I was one, because I tuned in late last week, and I tuned in late today, so I wasn't sure if you mentioned it on your opening. It's not good for us. I haven't got the full details, but it's not good for us. So look into it. Well, and maybe
yeah,
could,
Florida's very bank friendly, so you know.
Yeah. Now let me ask you on the last note thing. Is there any how should I any meeting there for the homeowners on the last note? What can we really do on that? Anything?
Oh, there it is.
Basically, Jesse, so they came out and saying that, you know, they can restart and you know, basically the 5-year statute of limitation doesn't matter. But
yeah.
from the other people's information that are looking at this objectively, the looming issue out there to go with is the one Jeff always said, which was jurisdiction. And because you run into the issues with the change in ownership and everything, it's the jurisdictional fight that's going to get you the farthest. That they don't have the ability to even step in the courtroom.
Now, why is that? See, that's where I understand.
Well, generally when things are have been securitized and they can't prove up the whole matter, jurisdiction becomes the issue, the main issue to push back on.
They have no agency. They have no jurisdiction. And yeah, Jeff
but
was...
But that would only be on securitized mortgages.
Yeah, which
right.
most every of them are.
Yeah, well, like mine aren't. I got two of them that are and one of them that isn't. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know Jesse's intently reading that thing right now. That's why they're silent.
Oh, I just read through it. But, you know, here's the problem with this. Here's the problem with it. You know, the court ruled that a 5-year statute of limitations for foreclosure cases is dynamic and not static. Resetting each month, a mortgage borrower remains in default. And since I'm not reading the actual case, I'd have to, God, I have to look at this next week because this week I'm just tied up. But the point is that that's creating new law almost.
Yep.
I would
Does that
think.
Make sense?
Huh? Well, they're coming to a conclusion that's
well, but I'm
quest-
all
you question
saying,
whether it's based in law.
Or they're legislating
yeah.
from the bench.
Terry,
that's
never
the
do
problem,
that.
You know.
Oh, yeah, of course not, Dave.
It doesn't even make sense.
Well, it's a
it just doesn't even make sense. Wow.
Yeah, if that thing came out a couple of weeks ago, I'm surprised Jingo
it
and everybody else isn't all over
the election,
that.
Or a couple of days before the election. November 3rd was the order date.
Yeah.
I just sent you the link to it.
Got lost in the political ruckus.
Yep.
That's probably exactly what happened, yeah.
Yep, it would appear so.
Yep.
Well, that's not a good ruling on its
yeah,
face,
see?
Obviously.
Nope.
It's not. That means, you know, it just doesn't, you know. You know, when you look at it, here's the deal. The dismissal of the foreclosure action revokes any acceleration. Without the need for any notice of deceleration. And this author is an attorney. Says, poof, just like that. How and why? Those are questions that the court just doesn't answer. And then Justice Lewis notes it in his concurring opinion. As if no default, the opinion is riddled with impracticalities and is out of touch with the mechanics of mortgage loan servicing and lending practice. For example, the court suggests that if the foreclosure action is dismissed, the borrower is simply able to resume making the standard monthly payments, as if no default had occurred. The court does not seem to recognize that mortgage servicers often reject payments after default has occurred, thus would not accept the contemplated payment from the borrower. And then stand your ground. While the Bertram decision may have default or dealt us a hefty punch, it has by no means knocked us out. There are still plenty of issues and defenses that we might have against banks, including standing and securitization failures. There are still plenty of borrower-friendly opinions regarding improper hearsay, untrustworthy business records, boarding process issues. But remember that not at all. Homeowners need to continue to stand up. So this is an Oppenheim law firm, you know? Wow, man. Of course, another attorney says corrupt Supreme Court judges manipulate the rules in favor of the banks. These criminals who wear black robes rewrite the laws in favor of the banks against the common people who have no power to fight back. They rewrite the lenders' contracts to protect their interests at the same time stripping the homeowner of any chance to retain their homes. The American dream is lost. Shame on these judges. You can see during the oral arguments the only thing on their minds is finding a way to screw the homeowner in favor of the lenders. So, you know, wow. Criminal judges. I mean, these are attorneys saying this about these people.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, man. I mean, the people are,
if the shoe fits, wear it.
Really, really upset. Huh?
Yeah. I say if the shoe fits,
yeah,
wear it. I mean, they are criminals,
yeah,
in what they're doing.
Yeah, I just don't understand that. How can a, you know, 5-year statute of limitation apply to a credit card, apply to a loan, a HELOC? How can it apply to everything, basically, but not a foreclosure? They're
because those things aren't involved in their retirement plans. That's why.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Bango, bango, Dave.
Yeah, I just don't understand.
Yeah, their judge's retirement is not invested in credit card securities. It's invested in mortgage securities. But yet they're supposed to be an impartial arbiter of disputes.
What planet are you from?
I said supposed to. I didn't say they were. They're anything but, as proven by their actions. So, anyway, the gentleman that brought this up, did you have anything else that you wanted to bring up or mention?
Yeah, I was just asking Jesse, what about like the lost note? Do we have any legs to stand on these things?
That's complicated. Okay, that's very complicated, but that's very simple on its face also.
Uh-huh.
Let me explain. In the state of Florida, there is, it's 679, I think it is. Yeah, I think it's 679. But you got to look at it. It's a lost note. Not only do they have to prove they lost the note, how and when they lost the note, that is where it becomes very hard for them to prove. So you say you had it, but how and when did you lose it? Who did you report it to? So you can start asking the stuff in discovery, and they got to answer. Was their insurance claim filed? You know, there's a lot of things that can be asked that you draw to the conclusion of, well, wait a minute. When did you lose a note and how? Who was it reported to? By whom? Who lost it? Who could have possibly lost it?
Yeah, and whose custody was it when it was lost?
Yeah, we lost it in the mail. Okay, well, give me a FedEx tracking number, UPS tracking number. I want to know how these things were lost. There's got to be claims. There's got, you know, you just can't say I lost the note. Doesn't work that way.
And you know something, Jess? Right. You know something? They did my thing started in 2008. And somewhere around 2009, I can't remember what year, they sent me a letter saying that they found the note. But I would have to subpoena them for it. I can't find the letter. For some reason, I can't find it, you know? So if I do find that letter, can I use that in court against them to say, look, they're just playing games?
You can, but what are you going to prove that they're playing games? I don't know, you know what I mean?
I don't know. I'm just asking.
Yeah.
To help, you know? Because at one point they couldn't find it. They search all over. That's what they said. They said to the cabinet, they said to the file, they did this. Couldn't find it. And then all of a sudden, they found it. But I would have to subpoena them to get it. And then when they file again, they file for a lost note again after the fact. You know, like they refile again the case, a new case, and then
right.
Then they said they're filing to filing for a lost note to reestablish the note.
Yeah. Well, okay. So you want to reestablish it again? You have to have parameters. So you got to go. Just type in the Google reestablishing lost note Florida, and you'll see in the statute all the parameters of which has to be established before they can just reestablish a note. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Now I found something interesting that I want to read. You said your case was 08, so I'm just going to read this, and then we're done talking about this for the night. Okay. This was just out November 10th. It's Cerotti's, another attorney here, and it says all indications. You know, the title is. Is the Florida statute of limitations thing of the past? And he says, all indications point to yes, but it's wise to heed the old adage that you should never count your chickens before they hatch. The Florida Supreme Court accepted the certiorari. How the hell do you – yeah, there you go. You say that, Dave. Earlier this year for the 5th DCA of the appeal and held oral arguments last week to resolve the dispute on the statute of limitations plaguing the mortgage industry. The state of Florida is divided into 5 district courts whose application of the law reigns sovereign over the respective districts. The debate stems between the 3rd DCA, which encompasses the populous county of Miami-Dade, as well as neighboring Monroe County. In all the DCAs and federal courts throughout Florida, which have spoken on the issue of the impact of the statute of limitations on refiled foreclosure actions, notably only the 2nd DCA and the federal courts in the Northern District of Florida have yet to publish an opinion on this issue. Now here's where it gets funky. While it is generally understood that the extinguishment of a mortgage only occurs when all sums secured are paid off or the mortgage is foreclosed, the 3rd DCA held that a mortgage may not have the right to foreclose on a mortgage if a prior foreclosure action was dismissed and a second action was filed within 5 years after the filing of the first. 5 years represents the statute of limitations for foreclosure actions in Florida. Consequently, a lucky borrower might get a free house if a mortgage has, through oversight or inadvertence, had its prior action dismissed, although there's some debate as to whether the mortgage would still encumber the property for the remaining mortgage term, even though the mortgagee can no longer foreclose on it. Indeed, it might be possible that the right to foreclose a mortgage can be lost, even if the mortgage was not negligent, but instead had voluntarily dismissed its own action for any reason, including but not limited to simply abandoning the action to give the borrower some relief. You understand what that means?
Yeah.
Okay, so everybody's clear on that. In order to better understand the debate and the possibility and hope that the issue might be coming to the end in Florida in the near future, it is important to analyze both sides of the issue, beginning with the borrower-friendly position of the 3rd DCA in Deutsche Bank versus America's versus Bovis. Held a mortgagee who had not taken any affirmative action to decelerate the was barred from refiling a foreclosure action more than 5 years after the filing date of the prior foreclosure action that had been dismissed without prejudice due to the mortgagee's failure to attend case management conference. Whatever that noise is, stop it. The 3rd DCA said the additional act to decelerate was necessary because the mortgagee's complaint in the first action accelerated the unpaid installments on the loan and therefore triggered the statute of limitations, not on the defaulted payments, but on the entire balance of the loan per. So, anyway, there is a 5-year statute of limitations in Florida to foreclose. Do you understand the difference of what they are saying? That makes sense?
I'm following you, yeah.
You sure?
Okay.
Okay.
I could go back to the tip anyway, you know.
Yeah.
Play back, you know, so.
Yeah. United States District Court, Middle District in Florida held that the Bovis decision was contrary to the overwhelming weight of authority, which holds that even where a mortgagee initiates a foreclosure action and invokes its right to acceleration, if the mortgage foreclosure action is unsuccessful for whatever reason, the mortgagee still has the right to file later foreclosure actions, so long as they are based on separate defaults. The great weight of authority in favor of the industry should not be terribly surprising. Well, you know what I mean? But so that is pretty interesting. It really, really is. But what it's saying in the first is that if they don't initiate a foreclosure action, John, and please, again, correct me if I'm wrong here, but what they're saying is if they don't initiate a foreclosure action within the 5 years of it taking place, they have forfeited the foreclosure action, period.
That's what people were hoping would be the case, but what the state ended up coming up with is then, well, if say it's 6 years since the original default, well, they can all, from the date of filing the complaint, they can only go back and claim 5 years, not 6. They waive those other years.
Correct. Correct. That's standard protocol,
right.
though.
Right.
That's standard.
But it just doesn't end at the end of 5 years that they can't refile and do a foreclosure.
Sure. No. 5 years represents the statute of limitations for foreclosures in Florida.
Correct.
Do you understand what the difference is?
No, I don't then.
Okay. If the say, for instance, like in my case, Bank of America filed. They went 4 or 5 years. All right, now it's been, 17 will make it 10 years since the initial foreclosure. Yes, folks, I just realized this 10 years. God damn, man. Okay? So they have waived their right to foreclose because it's been over the 5 years to even initiate an action. What's
since filing filing their list pendants?
Well, no, remember, they voluntarily dismissed it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so basically, they have taken no action for 10 years. You got it?
Yeah.
So the other way, what they're saying is, well, I can fire if it was filed and dismissed, filed and dismissed, filed and dismissed, keep coming back. But if they took zero action for 5 years, I think they're screwed, and that's what he's saying. See, it says, while it generally understood that extinguishment of a mortgage only occurs when all sums secured are paid off or is foreclosed, the third DCA has held that a mortgagee may not have the right to foreclose on a mortgage if a prior foreclosure action was dismissed and a second was filed within the 5 years after filing the first. 5 years represents the statute of limitations for foreclosure actions in Florida.
Right.
Consequently, a lucky borrower might get a free house if a mortgagee has, through oversight, inadvertence, had its prior action dismissed, although there's some debate as to whether the mortgage would still encumber the property for the remaining mortgage term, even though the mortgagee can no longer foreclose on it. See? It is possible that the right to foreclose a mortgage could be lost, even if the mortgagee was not negligent, but instead had voluntarily dismissed its own action for any reason, but not limited to simply abandoning the action to give the borrower some relief.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yep. Abandoning it, like, for lack of prosecution, it gets dismissed.
Yeah, whatever the reason is, yeah.
Modification or something like this?
Yeah, anything. Doesn't say. You know what I mean?
Well, that brings up one of the arguments that, you know, sometimes when they attempt to foreclose and then there's a dismissal because they didn't have all the paperwork or something, and then they refile with a new party, you know, that supposedly makes up the paperwork, that you can come back and say it should be dismissed because of res judicata. This has already been dealt with. And then you can challenge the whole chain of ownership they try to present and get a heart attack on
here
that.
Here it is. It's statute. Here's what it is. I'm going to read it to you. How the hell do we get off on this damn rant? You guys got me going crazy with this. You know this, right? I love this crap.
Well, all you got to do is bring up a question about foreclosure, and Jesse's off and running.
You're the man, Jesse. You're the man.
Yeah, here it is. Here's it. It's 9511. Limitations other than for recovery of real property. Action other than for recovery of real property shall be commenced as follows. Within 20 years, an action on a judgment or decree of court record of the state. Within 5 years, an action on judgment or decree of any court, not of record. B, a legal equitable action on a contract, obligation, liability found in a written instrument, payment bond, an action to foreclose a mortgage. Within 5 years, they have to bring an action to foreclose the mortgage, period. How do you like them apples?
It's good.
So that's the difference. They must take action. So once they take action, they can come back. But once they waive action for 5 years, they can't ever start. kind of confusing, but that's just the way it reads. A limitation, 9511. Yeah, within 5 years, an action to foreclose a mortgage.
Nah, Jesse, believe it or not, it makes total sense to me, and I don't know nothing about the foreclosure.
Well, you have latches, too, okay? Let's not forget that. So, you know, does that make sense? The statute or the latches mean that you've waived the action and you've hurt me, and I can actually prove that. Anybody who's had a home for 10 years in Florida or California, any places where these equities have gone up and down, you can actually say you've hurt me because I could have sold that house, for instance, for more than I owed on it had we removed the 5-year statute of limitation or removed the 5 years worth of payments, interest, and late penalties that you're not entitled to, giving me this balance, and now the property value went up. Well, now they're going back down, as John and I were just talking about Saturday or whenever. So they're coming all back down. So you've actually hurt me by not allowing me to sell my home. So latches is a simple principle, you know. That's not that, it's just not hard to, that, yeah. Yeah. That really,
So Jesse, let me ask you this stupid question. You know, where it says in there, you know, section 2C, you know, within 5 years, an action to foreclose on a mortgage. What's the difference between foreclosing on a mortgage and then other than for the recovery of real property? What's the difference between foreclosing on a mortgage and recovery of real property?
That I don't know. I would assume that recovery of real property. Well, wait a minute. Let me get where I'm going. Recovery of real property could be a boat, a car, a jet ski, a motorcycle, an airplane. That makes sense? I'm not so sure because a foreclosure is an equity. Not real property per se, right? The foreclosure is an equity.
Equity in property.
Yeah, it's both, but the foreclosure generally is for equity, right?
Correct. Exactly. It's actually to liquidate, to grab and liquidate the property to pay off a debt, whereas the other is to snatch a car to put it on the lot to resell it.
Exactly.
Let me ask a question.
Under latches, here's the beautiful thing. the rules of equity, right, which is what we were just talking about, are built on a series of legal maxims which serve as broad statements of principle, the truth and reasonableness of which is self-evident. The basis of equity is contained in the maxim of equity will not suffer an injustice. Latches is based on a legal maximum, quote, equity aids the vigilant, not those who slumber on their rights. Latches recognizes that a party to an action can lose evidence, witnesses, and a fair chance to defend himself or herself after the passage of time from the date the wrong was committed. Right? If the defendant can show disadvantages because for a long time he or she relied on the fact that no lawsuit would be started, then the case should be dismissed with the interest of justice. Real estate boundary disputes are inequity and may involve latches. For instance, if a person starts to build a garage and extends it beyond the boundary line of the neighbor's property, and the neighbor immediately files a suit, On the other hand, if the neighbor observes the construction of the garage on his or her property and does not file until the garage is completed, the defendant may plead latches, arguing that the neighbor had ample time to protect the property and rights before the construction was completed. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So there's all kinds of things we can do with that. All kinds of things we can do with that, John.
So in other words, the affirmative defense of latches beyond the 5-year statute of limitations is pretty darn powerful.
It really is. That's the one that George and I have been talking about for a long time is latches. But also 9511, because that's what the law says. It says it right there.
Well, latches is part of 9511.
Yeah, of course. But my point is that if you don't do that within 5 years, you're screwed.
Yeah.
So what does that actually mean, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Wow, that's pretty crazy. Yeah. Yeah, 5 years.
So
that's pretty damn good.
So, Jesse.
Yes, sir.
Jesse. Okay,
yes.
My one was done. I defaulted in 08, right? The file of foreclosure in 09. Okay, early 09. I can't remember the exact date. But it went on. They grant me a modification. I made my payments. And then they send back the fourth or fifth payment to me. Okay? They didn't grant the modification. Then it went on till 5 years. 5 years again passed, and the statute of limitation run on there. Right? The statute of limitation run from the last time I made the payment. That was a trial payment. I made it in 09 and it ran out. Okay. Now they start back a new case. A different attorney, different law firm. Would I fall under that 5 year statute of limitation you're talking about?
You're going to have to repeat that.
Okay. My 5 year ended, like, let's see, I think started in 09. Okay, I made payments in 09, and then they send back the payments to me. Send back my fourth payment or whatever payment they send back.
They
right?
Send it
they
back,
give me,
right, okay.
They didn't give me back my modification. Okay. And 5 years went in between. Sorry about that. 5 years went through the modification. 5 years went, right, lapsed. And then after the 5 years, they start back a new, like last year, they start back a new new case. So I'm asking you, being that there was a lapse between, you know, because they didn't send
the
me
only
something
thing,
real.
Here's the way. Here's what I'm going to tell you. Here's what I think is going to happen. I would think that that's going to cause more problems for these banks than help them. And I'll tell you why. When somebody comes up and files a foreclosure, these guys are usually too stupid. Like for me, I'm still getting, even though I've sued them and they paid me, not once, multiple times for threatening to collect a debt that they're not entitled to collect, threatening to take a legal action they're not entitled to take, which is the acceleration letters and all that other crap. And they're still bringing in the total amount plus late fees, interest, and all that. So what's going to happen
exactly.
is they're going to file a foreclosure. That foreclosure is going to be filed. I'm going to ask for it to be dismissed, and then I'm going to sue them again. Why? Because they have to come up. Think about what I'm saying. What is that noise, David? They're going to have to come
up. I don't know.
Yeah, it's just a lot of noise. They're going to have to come up with a balance and a sheet, right, some kind of accounting that shows all fees, interest charges, late penalty, anything and everything that they're not entitled to collect, and they're going to have to rebalance the whole thing out. I'm not so sure they're going to be able to do that and do it correctly, especially if it's been transferred in the middle of a default to another servicer. You understand where
okay,
I'm going?
Okay, let me ask. Yeah, but listen, there's another thing. On when you default, 90 days after you default, there's an insurance. I think it's called resuscitation. I can't remember the word, that they take, the mortgage company takes out in case you can't pay your mortgage. So
yeah.
At the 90 day, 91 day, the insurance company pays them off, right?
Not necessarily. Okay, let me tell you how that
not
works.
Really? Or they pay
yeah,
a certain amount of
works.
It.
You going to let me tell you how it works?
Sure.
I have a insurance policy, and it's no different than a credit card when they write it off, right, when it's charged off. Okay, so I collect on my insurance payment. Then I go ahead and I foreclose. I still have to go chasing the money for the insurance company. That's my job. That's how those policies work. When I foreclose, I have to reimburse them for whatever that they paid me. It's no different than a workman's comp and you get in a car accident or a job accident. Whatever they paid for you in medical bills that you regain in your settlement comes out of your settlement. Uh-huh. You have to repay that. You follow me? You got paid, but as soon as you get paid, you got to reimburse it. And that's the same way with insurance. I have a buddy who works in there, inside there. He's been a good friend of mine for a long time, and that's what he does. They're suing him. As a matter of fact, Fannie Mae got sued by all the insurance companies.
So shouldn't they have to declare that how much money that they paid you, the insurance company paid for you, disclose that?
No, why would they have to disclose it? That's their business.
Okay.
When I get paid, when I settle, I don't have to disclose to anybody what my employer paid for my health and recovery and therapy and whatever. I don't have to tell anybody that. I just have to write them back a check.
Yeah. But they were double dipping, you know?
No, they're not double dipping. They're not double dipping.
Okay.
They have to pay back what they were paid. So they're not double dipping. Does that make sense?
I got you.
Yeah.
I got you.
It's very easy. It's an easy concept to understand. They pay in advance. When they get paid, they got to return the money. That's it.
Money. Okay. Yeah. I got you. Well, we shall see where it goes. You know, I'm fighting them, so. Hopefully,
yeah.
You know.
Well, it's all you can do is fight them. You just keep after them.
Yep.
All right.
Oh.
Does that take care of your questions then?
Yeah, okay, go ahead. Yeah. Okay, thanks, guys. Thanks.
All right, thank you.
All right.
We need to have anybody else that has a question for us. Hit the one key on the keypad on your phone. That's how you get in the queue. And if we don't have anybody that raises their hand, then we are going to wrap things up for tonight. And I don't see any hands being raised at the moment. You know, it's one of these speak or forever hold your peace situations, everybody. Things have been a little quieter lately, and we understand that. It's about to change. It's going to change here pretty quick. But it is what it is right now, and I don't see any other hands up, so I'm going to go ahead and do the announcements for what's coming. Tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock Eastern, John is up to bat with protecting your money. So if you've got questions about protecting your money and how to do all that stuff, tune in tomorrow afternoon on the webinar at 3 o'clock Eastern. John is very familiar with that stuff, and he can answer your questions for you. Have your questions written down, please, so that you got them all there, and it's not like, oh, I had another one I was going to ask you. Don't go there. But then, of course, tomorrow night, Terry has her usual call at 8 o'clock Eastern. If you're not on Terry's email list for some reason, send an email right now to queensongbird@gmail.com and simply say, please put me on the list. You can even put it in the subject line. Just do that. And always remember, everybody, that when Terry sends these emails out, the reminder emails for her calls and the other information that's on them, never, ever, ever respond to her from one of those emails. It says it right at the very beginning of it in bold red letters. Do not reply to this email. She still has problems with people doing that. If you want to email Terry, just start a fresh email with queensongbird@gmail.com and do that. Don't reply to one of the other ones because she's not going to reply to you. She's going to ignore it because she's told everybody forever that she doesn't look at that stuff. She hasn't got time to sort all that stuff out. So please be courteous to her, but that's how you find out about her call. Then, of course, the rest of the week, for everybody that's a member, they have the use of the forum. They can go in there and study. They can post questions and get answers. They can look at the templates in the forum.
I shouldn't say templates, the examples, the pleadings that are in the pleading section of the forum. So there's lots of stuff, lots of benefit if you're a member. If you're not, well, I'm sorry, but you just don't get to participate in the good stuff.
And then, of course,
Monday night.
What? Remind people, don't send me an email at the Queen Songbird 2 address either. I only go in there once a week, and I will not answer them.
Right. But then Monday, we start out the week, as we always do, with Dallas Death Discussion. That's still on TalkShoe.com. The pin for that is 54318, and that starts an hour later at 9 o'clock Eastern. We're out here to help you guys, but you guys got to get in, study, and we'll help you fit the pieces of the puzzle together on how it applies to your individual situation. We can't do it for you, but we can help you do it the right way. And with that said, Jesse, it's all yours. Finish her up.
God bless everybody. Have a great week. Thanks to all our moderators. We cannot do it without you guys. And John, about 3 o'clock. But
cool.
Friday, Thursday won't be till dark.
So, oh, boy.
To practice.
I'll text you in the meantime.
So, yeah. But anyway, guys, again, don't miss John's webinar. It'll be good.
3 o'clock.
Yeah, he's good at that.
As always. Yeah, he's very, very good at that. So, all right, guys, have a great night and have a great week. And we'll see most of you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
All righty.
Thank you, Dave.
Have a great
appreciate
evening,
you.
Everybody.
All right, buddy. Bye-bye now.